Welcome back to Insight Live on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. The Hoffer Award is a major literary prize named for the American social philosopher Eric Hoffer, but I'm going to say Eric Hofer, and you'll understand why in a moment. Mary Mackey, a longtime professor at Sacramento State, has just won the Hofer Small Press Award for her 2018 poetry collection titled The Jaguars That Prowl Our Dreams. Mary has written 14 novels, including the New York Times bestseller A Grand Passion. She's written a number of screenplays, and this eighth and now award-winning poetry collection features new and selected poems from 1974 to 2018. Mary's back in the studio with us. Welcome, and wow, congratulations.
Thank you, and I'm happy to be here.
Tell me about winning this prize.
Well, it came as a complete surprise to me. I hadn't really known much about it, and I got a call from my editor saying, you just won the 2019 Eric Hoffer prize for the best book published by a small press. And I said, what? You know, it was really wonderful and kind of exhilarating. And I was sort of blindsided by it. And I started looking up the award, and I'm very happy to have won it. It is a major award, but also it's an award for independent thinking and for small presses. And so many things that are involved with it make me feel very much like I'm happy to be associated with it and feel really honored to receive it.
Hmm. You were in New York at the time.
I think
a whirlwind part of your book tour.
Absolutely. I was doing 6 events in 10 days, and I was doing a special event that Harper's Magazine had sponsored for me, and just all sorts of things were going on. And suddenly, in the middle of the whirlwind, the timing was actually perfect in many ways. This happened right in the middle.
Tell me about the impact on winning any award, and of course this one in particular, but being surrounded by a number of literary people and being able to say, now this work has been noticed and recognized in a really special way.
It's really moving for a writer, I think. It's as if somebody has really seen your work and has understood it and understood it in a profound way and there's a kind of validation to it. You know, no matter how much and how long you write and how many things you've had some success with, you never really are sure exactly where you stand. And I think these awards are very, very important to writers. And then they're important to the people who now will be look at your book and look at your work and maybe perhaps find in it something that speaks to them.
Eric Hoffer, and it's spelled H-O-F-F-E-R.
It's
called the Hoffer Award.
The Hoffer Award. That's what everyone calls it, yes.
I'm going to say why Hofer might be a very interesting pronunciation to consider. He was a social philosopher born in New York, but he made his way out to San Francisco and then as a longshoreman started writing his thoughts down. So later in his life, did he become a profound writer of the thinking that maybe all along had been profound?
Mm-hmm.
But then he came into national consciousness and really had a lot of power in making people think.
Yes, he did. And I find that his trajectory is quite interesting. He goes from a rather poor working class family, doing odd jobs, even living on Skid Row, to becoming a professor at UC Berkeley. And I think his consciousness of the fact that talent lies at all social levels in this country is a really important observation on his part.
His first book, The True Believer, was published in 1951, and there was a lot surrounding his work in the 60s. I found an old clip of one of the prominent CBS news journalists, one of Ed Murrow's boys. They were called the Murrow's boys back then, Eric Severide, interviewing Eric Hoffer in an extended 5-part interview. And I want to play that clip. Listen closely. He's referencing a book called The Temper of Our Time that he wrote in 1967. And you're going to hear in him, in this clip, him say his own name, too. So let's listen.
When I finished this little book, The Temper of Our Time, I sent it to my new editor, a very fine person, a very bright person. But and he mixed the up quality with quantity, and he sent me a letter, Mr. Hofer, couldn't we thicken it a little bit? I mean, add something, make it a little bigger. I didn't get mad. I wrote my letter, Dear Mr. McRae, I said, the book has 6 chapters. Each chapter has at least 1 original idea. So you have 6 original ideas. Each chapter has at least 2 good sentences. Add it up, you have 6 original ideas, 12 good sentences. Now, when I find a book, even at 1,000 pages, thick, that has 6 original ideas, 12 good sentences, I celebrate for a month. And that's a fact. See, right now, as I'm getting older, how hard it is to find anything that will touch you. If I get just 1 little sentence in my book, I'll remember the book to the end of my life.
Well, now, how do your friends on the waterfront really look at you, knowing you write books?
Oh, every longshoreman knows that if he tried hard enough, he could write like Shakespeare.
If he tried hard enough,
anyone could write.
Any
like
longshoreman
this.
Could write like Shakespeare. All right, did you hear him say his name?
I did. He said Hofer instead of Hoffer. Yeah, that's amazing. I did not know that.
I didn't either. But I think the power of hearing someone talk about their writing, and then you get a glimpse into how smart he is and how he thought. And in 2001, this prize was established and named
Yes,
for
it
him.
Was. And you know, I think the enthusiasm he shows for reading and for ideas is also really a very interesting part of his intelligence in this.
There's a cash award that comes with the prize, isn't there?
Not for this particular. There's different awards in this category. There's an award for the best book published by a small press, by an academic press, and then there's a grand award, which must be the best book published by, you know, the angels. I'm not sure what. And that has a small stipend. It has a cash award to it, but the others don't have cash awards.
Well, I want to congratulate you again, because this was not just an award for a collection of poetry. All genres were considered.
Yes.
So your book was up against fiction, nonfiction, memoir, anything that you can consider in there. And Jaguars was chosen as the best.
Yes, and it was. And it was an international competition, too. So that was...
I'm talking with Sacramento poet Mary Mackey. Her latest collection, titled The Jaguars That Prowl Our Dreams, just won the... All right, if you've said Hoffer, you could now say... The Hofer Award.
I'll try.
Did everybody catch that, by the way? Should we listen again just to the very beginning of that clip and listen for him saying his name?
When I finished this little book, the Temple of Our Time, I sent it to my new editor, a very fine person, a very bright person, but young, you know, and he mixed the quality with quantity, and he sent me a letter, Mr. Hofer, couldn't we thicken it a little bit? I mean, add something.
There it was.
Definitely Hofer.
Mr. Hofer, couldn't we thicken this a little bit? He mentioned everybody could write like Shakespeare. So let's talk about the part of your book that I think is very popular, your poems related to Shakespeare.
Yes. Well, this book covers my poetry from, there are 70 new poems and they're about, 48 new poems and 70 poems from my other collections. And they date back to 1974. And one of them was a collection from the early years of the Second Wave Women's Movement, which I never published separately, called Threatening Letters to Shakespeare, a threatening letter to Shakespeare. And at Shakespeare's women got to talk back. And I have Ophelia and Desdemona and Cleopatra and Lady Macbeth and Juliet. And these are just dialogues where Shakespeare, and, you know, I taught literature for years at Sac State. And these women just in Shakespeare's plays just get to say, you know, their side of the story. And so one of my most requested poems actually is a poem called Juliet.
And, would you read it, please?
I'd love to. Thank you. Juliet. I was a green girl, 14 and fresh, my breasts curled so tight in my chest that they ached. Time pulled through my body like sap, and I thought love grew everywhere like milkweed. Romeo was a human swagger. We drove over the state line near the end of spring and were married by a judge in striped pajamas who loaned us a cigar band for a ring. I said, look how the dogwood is in bloom, like the lips of small children in the naked woods. And Romeo said, let's stop for a cheeseburger. I said, when I see a river, I imagine a mouth at the end that could swallow us both. I said, this is the beginning of a great adventure. I said, I've escaped into love, and I'll never be unhappy again. But there was wax to take off the kitchen floor, and diapers to wash, and Romeo snored. And I found that love grows around the heart like the bark on a tree. And we had 3 children, and nobody died, and you can wait forever for the balcony scene.
Ah, that's Mary Mackey's poem, Juliet. And what's the discussion around that poem or your Shakespeare poems?
Well, you know, the Shakespeare poems, people love them because, the women in Shakespeare's plays have a very set feeling in our culture. Mm-hmm. And to sort of have the other side of it, of the consciousness of what the women might have been thinking, I think this putting yourself imaginatively in the consciousness of others is something that people can really understand and relate to with that. And also, this is a poem against, there's some ways in which Romeo and Juliet is the story of two young teenagers who just, they act in haste. I mean, if they just waited 5 minutes, they would both be alive. And so this is kind of an anti-romance in that way. And at the same time, you see that there's love in the reality, but it's not the love of young romantic love. It's kind of long term. But there's also some disappointments. And, it's just...
I connect with a timelessness in it. It makes me think of my mother, my grandmother, my daughter, my granddaughter, the span of how what's written in here just reaches across time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Read another one, would you?
Okay.
Another Shakespeare?
Well, can I? I could read that. How would you like a climate change love poem?
Oh, all right.
Because this is a very varied book. Some of it has these, early women movement poems. A lot of it has to do with my time I lived in the tropics for off and on for 6 years, and my look at, and then, the other 28 years I've been going to Brazil, and I'm very concerned about changes in the environment. And I really feel that in order to face what's coming down the tracks toward us, we need to preserve joy and love at the same time that we face catastrophe. And so this may be, as far as I know, the first climate change love poem. It's called In This Burning World. On the long road down the hill, the cobblestones tip us like drunken sailors under a sky smeared with volcanic dust. At the bottom lies a sea clear and pale as the skin beneath our arms. In this burning world, where we can never stop to rest, you reach out and brush the tips of my fingers. Our parched skin flakes off in tiny bits and floats up toward the sun, riding the great cone-shaped thermals of this slowly turning planet. We are two birds gliding through an empty sky, lost, uncertain, filled with unreasonable joy.
We have to feel and find and understand love if the planet's going to be saved.
I think so. I think, we have to band together. We have to preserve joy and human dignity and cooperation, and but also preserve joy in the face of change, because without it, we destroy what we're trying to preserve in ourselves.
Mary, what kind of field study were you doing in Brazil and Costa Rica?
I was actually getting a PhD in comparative literature, but I was acting as an unpaid research assistant in the tropics. And then my husband and I, later in life, my husband and I have been going to Brazil. He does work on environmental issues. So many things have drawn me to the tropics over many times. I had a mentor in... not really a mentor, a professor I worked for in college who was a great expert on the uses of tropical plants. His name was Richard Evans Schultes. And because of him, I became very, very interested in the tropics as a place to get away from everything human and civilized and see what the world was like. Most women in my time wrote about small domestic issues, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But I wanted to write more like, Melville. I wanted to board sailing ships and meet one-legged sea captains and, things like this. And so I've always tried to do adventure in my life in a way that was very kind of going out there and taking chances and looking at the natural world.
Jaguars appear in your work at different times, and there is that quality to the jaguar that is mysterious, but also sudden and unexpected. And maybe that connects somehow to your attraction for adventure.
Yeah, well, I think it's very symbolic in that way. Also, in the upper Amazon, when the indigenous people do their vision quest, they often transform into jaguars, which prowl the dream world. And my poetry has a strong mystical bent. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has roots in the work of not particular religions, but in kind of mystical visions. Some of which come out of the fact that I run very high fevers, and over 8 times in my life, I've run fevers nearly 107. And when this happens, I'm very sane otherwise, but when this happens, I tend to see sort of other kinds of things. And I'm making no suppositions about what these things are, but it's a different kind of world that makes me understand, I think, what mystics see in some ways. And that permeates my poetry. It's kind of a deep movement into sort of another realm. So you see the forest, but you also see the forest behind the forest. You see what else is there.
Some of your poetry is written based on those fevers.
Yes, it is.
In your childhood.
Yes.
When is the most recent episode you had?
The most recent episode was, where I got that high, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe a little.
You do talk about it as if it's like a drug-induced high.
Yeah, it's like a drug-induced high. And sometimes when I'm there, I speak in rhyme couplets for reasons nobody understands. I've talked to people about it. Mm-hmm. And I think, I've done it for 4 hours at a time.
Wow.
And I come out with poems. I often come out with poems when I have a fever. And I don't seek fever, but it has to be quite high to do that. Up to the point where you get over 105, you feel horrible. Once above that, you start feeling elated, and you don't feel bad at all. You feel
Isn't
quite wonderful.
Isn't your life in danger at that point?
Yes, it is. Everybody else is running around saying, she's going to die, we have to bring down the fever. And you're saying, never mind, it doesn't matter. You know, I feel fine, and let me tell you some more. You know, and then I'll say it in rhyme, and I tell jokes, and I'm just insufferable. You know.
When you're in it, do you have a sense of this kind of heaven or leaving the earth or any limbo
place?
I'm
not trying to, you know, I think I'm unusual in this that I don't specify a specific religion. I mean, most mystics have one. But I have a feeling of kind of moving into another realm where everything is warm and wonderful and pleasant. And I sometimes hear voices and see people. And, you know, obviously something amazing is happening. And I'm not sure what is happening. And I'm, you know, make no claims for it. But I do know that it has produced a lot of images for poetry. And it's given me a door to move back in there without fever from time to time.
Have you said to your husband, record me or family members?
Well, you know, people are too busy trying to keep me alive to record me. And the last time it really happened most severely was in a small town in Mexico where there was nobody, no doctor, no way out. Mm. And, you know, all he could do was rub me with alcohol and feed me aspirin and, you know, try to get me down. And it was very scary for him. Unfortunately, I wasn't scared, so I couldn't be as sympathetic as I should have been.
But you just made me realize that I'm taking for granted the fact that you're here. And, of course, you've lived through every one of those episodes.
Yes, I have. Yeah,
that so I'm thinking, can we capture it? What can we do with
it?
What
yeah,
happens?
Let's capture it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just have to say, if they ever give you a choice, the way to go, take fever, because really high fever. But I'm not suggesting people go out and get malaria. It's just, I think it's just given me a door into another way of looking at things that's been very important for my poetry.
And you remember a lot from being in that state,
I do,
obviously.
And that's the interesting thing about it. I do remember it. My earliest memory of it takes place when I'm almost 3 years old, and I can remember it very distinctly.
So, sorry to spend so much time on these fevers, which are fascinating,
okay.
But what's the science that you've been able to learn about why your body does this?
Why my body doesn't deal with it? I think because when I was very young, and I don't remember this one, I had an extremely high fever where I turned, I would have died except my father was in a military hospital and had access to penicillin. And I think somehow the fact that that happened to me as an infant probably changed my physiology in some way. So that I seem to be able to tolerate them, but that I also tend to have I run high fevers. I'll run a fever of 102 at the drop of a hat. I mean, that happened to me last week.
I'm glad you made it back from New York. All right, before we let you go, what are you working on? What's coming next?
Well, I'm working on a series of poems about Cassandra because I think she's the poster girl for our time.
Mm.
She who said the truth who no one believed about the future. I don't see myself as a prophet. I'm looking at the, you know, this is part of my climate change interest. And then I have a series of novels about the goddess-worshipping cultures of old Europe, and I've got an outline for the final in the series of 5 novels.
It is always a pleasure to have you here. Thank you. And again, many congratulations on the Hoffer, now Hofer Award.
Thank you so much for congratulating me on the Hofer Award.
There we go. All right. We'll post a link to our previous conversation. You can hear more, including Mary's reading of the title poem in the book. And again, she is the winner for Best Book Published by a Small Press. Thanks, Mary. And you're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.